This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Earlier this week, an expose in the Guardian newspaper revealed that the CIA took photographs of detainees while they were naked before turning them over to other governments as part of the so-called Extraordinary Rendition Program. The detainees were captured as part of the U.S.'s war on terror. None were given their due process rights, and now we know that several were humiliated and stripped of their dignity before being likely tortured by governments known for harsh treatment of prisoners. The Guardian quoted Dr. Vincent Iacopino of Physicians for Human Rights, who called it, quote, sexual humiliation, and added, quote, it's cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment at a minimum and may constitute torture. The story got lost between the news of the ISIS attack in Belgium and a similar attack by an ISIS-affiliated group in Pakistan. There's been very little mainstream media coverage of it in the West. Well, joining us to help remedy that is Ray McGovern. He is a former CIA analyst who was with the agency for 27 years. He now serves on the steering group of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, of course, it shouldn't surprise us that photographs of naked detainees were taken because we remember the pictures from Abu Ghraib. So this was a set that what the Guardian newspaper reported on were prisoners that were sent to other countries into these black sites, the so-called Extraordinary Rendition Program. But the Abu Ghraib photographs remind us that the U.S. soldiers routinely humiliated Iraqi prisoners there, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's part of the idea, of course, to humiliate people. And if we're talking about a Muslim subdivision of people, so to speak, that's particularly egregious. That's particularly unconscionable because of some of their sensitivities to being naked. And as bad as it is with men, one boggles at the notion that this would also obtain with women.
Now, we also know from the Guardian newspaper article that the reason the CIA might have done this would be to kind of cover its own behind, if you will, because they apparently wanted to have a photographic record of the state of the detainee without their clothes on before turning them over to governments that, of course, the U.S. never admitted were likely to torture these folks. But this was sort of the CIA wanting to show, look, this person is in perfectly good health before they left our hands. What do you make of this reasoning?
Well, I've done a little research, Sonali, and I have documentary evidence now going back to 2009, where we see the CIA issuing this guidance saying a series of photographs are to be taken of high-value detainees while nude to document the physical condition of the high-value detainee upon arrival. So it's very clear that it's a documentation sort of thing as well as a humiliation. And, you know, if this is a kind of a rear-end saving mechanism here, a kind of preemptive defense, if you will, CIA agents wishing to be able to say, well, he looked this way when we got him. I don't know what the Egyptians or the Syrians or, you know, I don't know what they did to him, but we didn't do it. Well, you know, that suggests that everyone knew that rendering prisoners, or what they call detainees, to regimes known for torture, and that being in all, you know, all seriousness, the reason why they did it to those regimes, well, there would result in torture. And in spite of the protestations that they gave the State Department, oh, no, we wouldn't torture, they would be. And then if it came out that their bodies were completely messed up, then the CIA guy said, well, you know, we didn't do it. You know, this has tangible significance, Sonali. We're not talking in a vacuum. There's a fellow named Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, L-I-B-I, Libi because he was a Libyan, okay? And he had some role with al-Qaeda. He was sort of like a travel agent, okay? Now, they captured him and said, oh, you're a travel agent. So tell us about all those al-Qaeda types you sent up to Saddam Hussein to be trained in all these terrible weapons. And he said, what are you talking about? And so, oh, we know. Well, they couldn't get him to, quote, confess, end quote, that he sent all manner of al-Qaeda operatives up to Saddam Hussein to be trained in chemical and biological and explosive devices. And so they sent him to the Egyptians. Now, I'll bet they took nude photos of al-Libi before they sent him to the Egyptians, because the Egyptians, well, they've been, you know, they have more years of practice at this kind of thing. And they got him to confess. And days after he confessed, George W. Bush, on the 7th of October, 2002, 3 days before Congress was asked to vote for war on Iraq, George W. Bush said, now we have a source that confirms that Saddam Hussein was training al-Qaeda operatives in chemical and biological warfare techniques, and it was all, you know, that was part of the rationale. Now, what happened to al-Libi? If somehow he got free, and he's told the press, you know, this was a crock. I only said that because I know that's what they wanted me to say. I wanted the pain to stop. He ended up in a Libyan prison. And when human rights advocates found him there and interviewed him, well, he committed suicide just a couple weeks later. Committed Muslims, which al-Libi is, do not commit suicide and do not have torture marks all over their back when their body is found. So this could not be more horrendous. And it goes back to the lawyers, of course, that, quote, approved, end quote, these torture techniques and have not been held accountable, but are teaching in prestigious law schools like the one at University of California, Berkeley.
Right. Now, Ray, let's talk about the fact that these photographs, this treatment of detainees, primarily from the Muslim world, has been going on for a couple of decades now, and it's not as though the Muslim world is unaware of them. In fact, they are extremely aware of the humiliation that their, you know, brothers, if you will, have undergone at the hands of Americans, at the hands of CIA agents, as well as contractors, private contractors, and others. And when we are seeing these attacks by the Islamic State occurring now in Western parts of the world, but also, of course, occurring in the Muslim world itself, but when we see them, particularly in the West, we are not connecting the dots between the collective humiliation that the U.S. Fomented of the Muslim world and what we are seeing these fundamentalist groups do now. Not to say that one justifies the other, but shouldn't we, you know, try to understand the motivations of this extremist organization as linked to the collective humiliation that we have wrought?
Well, you're absolutely right. We don't connect the dots. That's why you, Sonali, are not on MSNBC. You know, you connect the dots, and that's regarded as un-American. Sure, the dots need to be connected. And let me just give you a real tangible example. Matthew Alexander, not his real name, Air Force light colonel, a lieutenant colonel, out running 100 interrogators in Iraq during the height of the war, 2005-2006, he publicly said that when they asked all these jihadists, the ones that came in from abroad, okay, what are you doing here in Iraq? They said two things. They said Guantanamo, and they said Abu Ghraib. 90% of them, okay? Now they'd say three things: Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and drones. Drones are regarded as the most cowardly, the most terrifying, the most sophisticated acts of terrorism in the history of the world, and people who characterize them that way are correct.
I mean, I can only imagine that the groups like Al-Qaeda and now the Islamic State, when they engage in their recruitment efforts of, you know, vulnerable young people, that the photographs of Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, etc., would be exactly what they might want to show these people to help them overcome their fear of death, their fear of and their distaste for killing. All they have to do is say, look at what the Americans have done to Muslims. Why are we, so how do we handle this? I mean, what really needs to happen? Wouldn't it help for the United States to come clean about the torture it has done, the sexual humiliation and the overall humiliation and the punishment and the bypassing of international law, come clean and issue a blanket apology, undo as much as it can possibly undo the damage it has done, by shutting down Guantanamo? I mean, going through all of these steps, wouldn't that have a much greater impact on ISIS's ability to recruit and carry out these attacks than anything else?
Well, I hope this won't sound too cynical, Sonali, but yes, you're absolutely right. This would have that impact, but this would not be viewed very favorably by those who profiteer on war. There are a lot of people making a lot of money by selling arms, by making arms. And for this kind of thing to continue, we have David Petraeus, a famous general, saying, oh, we're looking at a 30 years war. We're looking at a war that my grandson will be fighting in. Okay, well, who profits from all that? It's almost as though I've come to believe that it's not about ending this kind of thing. It's at keeping it at kind of levels that require more and more arms. Let us sell more and more arms to the Saudis and others. And the Israelis are safe, because Sunni and Shia are killing each other off. And as one Israeli official said a couple of years ago, as long as this is going on, not only in Syria, but in the region as a whole, Israel has nothing to fear from Syria. Well, that's the name of the game. And so, yes, if we connected the dots, if we said, look, we're going to come clean here, instead of a president that says, yeah, we tortured some folks, we need a president with some guts. And Obama, to my great regret, he's 7 years too late in doing what he should have done. And I've come to the conclusion that, like John Kennedy, he knew that he would be dangerously exposed were he to move against the deep state, were he do the kinds of things that he did, namely call for a pullout of Vietnam, talk with Castro, talk with Khrushchev. He did all those things. And you know what happened to him? Well, I know a person that I have great confidence in told me that he, in turn, had a friend who was at a small dinner with Barack Obama, and they were pinging on him because they were, the progressives. They say, now, Barack, why did you do that? And why you're supposed to be a progressive. Finally got up, didn't have his dessert, and said, look, don't you remember what happened to Dr. King? Obama is a very cautious fellow, and whether it's a physical fear he has or whether he's afraid of being politically emasculated more than he has already been, I don't know, but it doesn't really matter because he's not up to it.
Well, that's just getting back to this issue of the fact that the Muslim world sees very clearly what U.S. policy has been and the refusal by the media to connect these dots. I'm wondering whether you think even progressive activists are doing enough to connect these dots, because it's one thing for us to blame Barack Obama, but are we ourselves? I mean, I just keep seeing these pray for peace, posters all over my social media feed. And frankly, I just get annoyed when I see this. I mean, what does it mean to pray for peace, as if these attacks have come in a vacuum, as if there's just this completely irrational motivation that nobody can make any sense of, that these extremist groups are using to justify their killings? I mean, even progressives are not saying, hang on, it's because, why did they hate us? Well, it's because of Guantanamo. They hate us because of what the CIA is doing. And they hate us because they've sexually humiliated and taken naked photographs of countless men. And I feel like we, especially during this election year, I feel like we're scared to connect those dots. I don't know.
Well, so now they don't have to, because all my progressive friends from New York, where I spent my youth, they read the New York Times. Black and white, as my Irish grandfather used to say. I read it black and white. In other words, page after page. And they don't see this stuff. Nobody connects the dots in the New York Times, except very rarely when you have an investigative reporter doing a good job. And there is it occasionally that. Similarly with the Washington Post. So if they don't have to connect the dots, and they don't have any skin in the game, literally, because their kids are not fighting these wars. 50% or more of our troops come from the inner cities and from towns in this country of less than 50,000 people. That's a fact. That's not a volunteer army. That's not a volunteer army. That's a, what would we call it? That's a forced army of people who have no education or job opportunities. They're not recruited. They're forced into having three meals a day, and that's what we end up with. But as
A
long as
poverty
they,
draft.
yeah, pa, that's what see how white privileged I am? I couldn't even remember the word poverty. Isn't that awful? It's up to us. And what you say, well, what you say is right. I'm a progressive, even though I forget every now and then the word for poverty. I'm on bail. Okay, I'm out on bail from having shut down with 11 accomplices, so to speak, the Jerry Berrigan Brigade at Hancock Air Force Base. We shut it down for almost 2 hours back 2 months ago. I'm on bail now, and I have to go back up there whenever the judge says I go back. That's what we have to do. We have to shut these things down. And we can wring our hands and we can make speeches, but as Cesar Chavez used to say, speeches are really nice, and articles, oh, they're great too. But without action, nothing's going to happen. And he was so right.
Ray, I want to thank you for everything you do and for spending this time with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're most welcome, Sonali.
Ray McGovern is a former CIA analyst who was with the agency for 27 years. He now serves on the steering group of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Back in just a moment.